Tell Me a Story. It's a show about you. Now here's your host, astrologer Deborah Silverman on Empower Radio.
I know you can really can't make it all excited. Hey, turn that music off. I'm talking. You said Empower Radio. Empower Radio, Deborah Silverman, an astrologer. Here I am today having an interview with someone so interesting that you're going to feel empowered before we're done. But first, I want to tell you a little bit about myself. My name is Deborah. I've been an astrologer. I was just counting up. It's been almost 40 years. It's embarrassing to say. 40 years of staring at the stars. My neck's a little sore, but I'm filled with stars dust in my head. And I'm going to stay a little bit away from the astrology because today we're going to use my brain as an access point to talk about the nature of consciousness and that there is this thing called, so it's spoken. And we're going to find out today from an expert. We're talking to Dr. Jill Bolte Taylor. I love her bio. Listen to this. She's a Harvard trained and polished, I made that up,
neuroanatomist
who experienced a severe hemorrhage on the left hemisphere of her brain way back in 1996. And on that afternoon of she had a stroke where she couldn't ended up, she couldn't walk, she couldn't talk, she couldn't read or she couldn't write. That's so amazing. Or even remember any of her life. And then it took her 8 years to come back and recover. But the best part about her story, and many of you have heard her on a TED Talk, she did the TED Talk, and it was because of you, Jill, I love this story, that the TED Talk, the name TED Talk became famous. It was with her at the same time she became very well known because you know what it is about your TED Talk, Jill? It's experience. One of the things about Jill Bolte Taylor, you're going to find out today. Why is there a funny little noise? Anybody hearing that funny little noise? Are you hearing it, Jill?
I do hear a funny little noise.
It's that little guy that lives inside my computer. He's so annoying.
I think it's the groundhog.
I know, Sarah, ever since you fixed that thing out, it's making a funny little noise.
Let's see if it goes away.
Oh, that's better.
He left. Yeah, make that go away because that little groundhog, he is so annoying. Okay, so this is what's true about your TED Talk, Jill. And why it is she's been on Oprah and she's been able to really been acknowledged for one of the 100 most influential people because there's things that this lifetime I've experienced is there's people that talk and they have theories. And when they talk to you, you have information go in and out of your ear and sometimes it lands in your body. Then there's people that talk to you and you feel them like it's an experiential. It's not just words. It's actually lands in your body or it lands in your emotions. And you remember the story long after the bell goes off because you can feel what they're saying. They're not just theorizing. And my experience of your TED Talk, Jill, and why I've watched it way before I met you, I watched it and I was so captivated was we were in the experience with you weren't talking about it. You were experiencing it again. And it was so visceral that we got the ride of what it would like. We'd like to have a stroke and go reaching for the soap in the shower when you realized your hand just went through the shower wall and we were tripping with you. I like to describe it to people that Jill, who doesn't do drugs, was suddenly in this altered state. And with her in this talk on that TED Talk, and you guys can all Google if you haven't watched it yet, you will experience what it's like when the mind, as far as the left brain or logic, goes into the background and suddenly you're in this other state of consciousness. And it's not just talking about it. We actually got high with you by watching a video. So in any real life experience, if you guys think back to something that's happened to you, whether there's a death in the family or whether you're falling in love or whether you're suddenly realizing that you had an insight, there's an experiential moment that takes your breath away and it gets embodied and you can't take it out of your head. Like think to hearing on a phone call, someone telling you there's been a death in the family and suddenly everything slows down and you're feeling yourself leaving your body almost. And there's a memory or a moment you won't forget. I can remember the day they called me to tell me my dad had cancer. I know just where I was standing. And all of a sudden time stands still and your awareness grows to the size of the room and your mind moves over to the left and your right brain comes in and you lose your breath. And so we're going to talk about that today because one of the experiences of being with Jill, and I get to be her friend as well as being a respectful comrade in the name of changing consciousness, is that when you're around Jill, there's no way that the world's going to stay small and little. All of a sudden, everything gets big. moments get a little bit larger. You're laughing a little bit harder. You're wondering why everything is so funny. Do you remember, Jill, when we went to this talk, we were in, this is the funniest story. We were in Aspen. I don't know how I got invited to this. And it was a group of scientists and they were all introducing themselves. We were up with Lynn and it came time for me to introduce myself. And I was embarrassed to say I was an astrologer because I was amidst all these scientists. So I lied and said I was an astronomer. You remember this? And then later on, I came clean because some guy said, after we had this long conversation, it was all about the ecology and the environment, and I didn't want them to know I was an astrologer. And then one of the guys at the break said, you know, you've been very interesting, Deborah. I'm so glad I didn't know you were an astrologer because I wouldn't have listened to a thing you said, and I lied. And said, well, I am kind of an astronomer. I do study stars, but from a different angle. That would be right-left brain distinction. And so what it happens is our left brain and how we operate in this world is we so much keep the linear logical world to keep us safe, when in truth, it's the right brain. And I wanted to check in with you, Jill, here in a moment. How much of the right brain? What is the nature of its influence? And I've even heard the question mark be posed that this isn't really true, that the right and left brain is just a theory. Is it factual that there really is a difference in function between the right and left brain?
If you look at the brain and you look at how it organizes information, it is pretty specific in certain groups of cells are responsible for certain abilities. For example, language. So your language is going to be in your left brain. We know that. Vision is going to be in the posterior portion of your brain. Personality, character is going to be in the frontal part of your brain. So we understand that there are differences in groups of cells inside of the brain. The question is, what happens if you wipe out an entire hemisphere? And the problem with that is, if you wipe out the left hemisphere, you've just wiped out language. So if you wipe out language in the left brain, who's going to be able to communicate with you about the experience? But what the right brain does is it takes the bigger picture and offers you everything connected as a whole, the context of anything, because everything is right here, right now. And it is expansive and open. And in that collective whole, there's no boundary and no division. And you have to have the specific cells in the left brain to break things down, find barriers, and then be able to define things through the use of language. Now, that's one way of looking at the brain. And you can look at it purely neuroanatomically. And
so it's anatomically true that the left brain's function is to collect information in a linear level. And the right brain is more holistic. Yes. Or more. That's a fact. That's not a question mark.
No. That's, you have to have linear thinking, left brain. You have to have that to function linearly. So linearly, what do we mean? We mean like I'm going to analyze something from A to B to C to D to E. I know that I have to put my socks on before I put my shoes on. I have to have a left brain in order to know how to do that function. If I just have a right brain, I may be able to put my shoes and socks on, but I have no idea what order because I can't think linearly, but I have the ability in the present moment. So
is it fair to say that children's brains, when they're babies, that they're functioning more on right brain?
It is, because they haven't learned the details or just the discrimination and the boundaries. They don't have the knowledge base that comes with language and with learning.
So the right brain has a faculty that can just let itself be spontaneous. It's already built for a child.
Like it's right
it doesn't
here.
Require learning.
It's right here. You know, what happens to you? Let's say you parachute down into the middle of China and you don't speak Chinese. You're going to have a big picture experience, right? You're going to be alert. You're going to be pretty much on alert. You're going to be able to communicate, but you're not going to use language. But you're going to have an experience. That's your right brain functioning.
So the right brain
is always there.
What I love to describe right brain as is, I hate to do this, it's not really fair, but it's the feminine side that has a collective gestalt where it feels and it senses. We were just talking about when time stands still, the left brain steps over and suddenly you're feeling, you're sensing, you're hearing. It's like a sensual, more of a gestalt. It's like a big picture. And when you described in your story of when the stroke hit you and you could suddenly feel yourself going into this complete state of like, I don't really care if my brain is checking out. And then the left brain's going, excuse me, you're having a stroke, you goof, call 911. That's the number to call. And your right brain was like, I don't really care.
Right. But the thing is that with those abilities, the collective that you would call feminine and the collective abilities that you would call masculine, ultimately, when you put those certain characteristics together, you're going to end up with a personality. I'm going to have a very different personality when I'm in my critical judgment, when I'm in my analysis, when I'm thinking linearly, when I'm doing that level of calculation. I'm going to have a character. At the same time, I'm going to have a very different character when I'm feeling open and expansive and compassionate and loving and at one with all that is.
They're Why can't we just live in our right brain? You know what?
Jill? It's be totally non-functional.
I like that idea. I'm kind of a wild woman. Would you lift up your computer? Because I think that's what's that little funny noise. I think your microphone is bumping into somebody. So okay. Let's talk about that, because there are people out there. As an astrologer, my gift is I first look at the left brain. I look at the chart and I see linear numbers and I see details, and it's hard science.
Yeah.
Then I jump over to my right brain to interpret it. Right. And that allows me to use more of the intuitive and what you're calling the expansive and that really large picture. So in my universe, I know this is so bad. What happened? This is my question. Where did our society get so identified to the security of the left brain's linear and obliterate or deny that intuitive right brain function that can allow itself to be expansive and spontaneous and a little unruly and a little messy? Where can you identify what happened?
I think two different things happened in the evolution of mankind. And one of them is language. When we all started to write, I mean, just think about it. Hundreds of years ago, the only people who read and wrote were the priests. So the rest of us, we didn't have that. We were not burdened. Our brains were not burdened with that level of detail. As time goes on and we all acquire the skill set of reading and writing, now we're taking a whole lot of energy and putting it purposely into the left brain and the way that the left brain manages things. And then on top of that, you add now a technology and an argument from science. And science comes in and says, in order to be true science, you have to be able to follow the scientific method. Method, by definition, means A, then B, then C. You have to be able to follow a method, and then you have to be able to duplicate your results, which means not only do you do A and B and C, but it has to be reproducible and explained by A, B, and C. So the scientific method, as it is currently defines, purely left brain activity. But we're whole brain people. So how do we use a left brain method in order to identify and register and calculate and understand things of the right brain nature? It becomes impossible, which means it doesn't exist. And so then you have this whole argument between spirituality, which is unprovable by the scientific method. So science says, well, then we're against it and it's not right and it's not real.
That's why when I grow up, my fantasy is they're going to have research about astrology, and they're going to prove that, because it's been now almost 40 years and there isn't a chart that I do where I don't hang up the phone and go, that was so obvious, because it doesn't make any sense. This is where the left brain suffers because I so know that there is a God or there's a creative intelligence or a genius that's operating. I love when Einstein said, God's not playing with dice, but my left brain is still left in the dark going, excuse me, Pluto is affecting me and it can't be seen. And it's the small, like, no, this is the dumbest conversation. But that polarity, I think, is part of what's diminished, because they really aren't comparable. They're not complementary. The left brain language system and the right brain magic.
Yeah. Well, and you know, there's so much information that the left brain doesn't have yet. And until the left brain gets more information, then it can't say, oh yeah, that's actually legitimate.
I know. So that's what's going to happen in the future. So in your life, because were you a total left brain person when we started this movie way back when?
No, I was a right brain.
But when you were a scientist?
And I was a right brain. And then I grew up to be a left brain scientist. Well, no, I was a whole brain. But I started out right brain. I brought the left brain on, became scientific, went to Harvard, followed, you know, the Harvard research mode. Did all that, and then I lost my left brain, and I believe the reason why I recovered so well was because when I lost my left brain, it wasn't that big of a deal because I already had a healthy right brain. And then I used the healthy right brain to recover what I wanted to recover in the left brain.
And so how would you describe someone who had a healthy right brain?
And a healthy left brain?
No, just a right brain. Let's say there's people out there listening right now and they're considering, wow, is there, like in the ideal world, my system is in astrology, that you balance the whole system? Because I always talk about the four elements, but the goal of the game is to have, in a perfect world, your right and left brain would be best friends.
Exactly.
So your right brain, that would be a manifested world where we actually saw the male and female in tandem and harmony. But
that's
for some
exactly
of you out
right
there, if you're listening to this radio show, you've probably got a big fat right brain. Like, you want to suspend the linear logical world. You don't want to be controlled by some kind of thought process that won't allow you to believe in astrology or believe in magic. So you've got some right brain. And I would suggest, I think, may help me with this, that artists or musicians or people who are psychic or intuitive have a higher functioning right brain. Would that be accurate?
Well, I think that they are running right brain circuitry. That's how I would say. They're running right brain circuitry.
Is there a way to cultivate right brain? Like, is there anything you would suggest as far as skills? Tell me.
Absolutely. You know, the willingness to, first of all, participation in any creative process, whether it's some form of art, whether it's music, whether it's actually getting in your body and having movement, getting outside, getting into an open, wide open, expansive experience. Stand by the edge of the ocean and look out and feel the expansiveness of the universe around you. And we are the center of the universe and we are particulate matter all at the same time. Stand on a mountaintop, you're in the mountains, get out there and look out over that mountainous range and feel the enormousness of all that is. Allow yourself to go be experiential. The experiential experience involves that right brain experience.
Okay, stop right there. So for all of you, and I think your microphone's doing that, Jill, that funny. I think you should take off your headset and just look at her. She's trying to figure it out. And see if you can just be like a normal, not funny, noisy person.
Okay, I'm going to try.
Good luck with that. So, but here's my suggestion for you guys listening, doing yoga, putting on music, singing, you know, all the childlike behaviors that get left out. People often, when I see them and I work with them, their favorite line is they're stuck. They would not say that about Jill Bolte Taylor or Deborah Silverman. We don't get stuck. You know why we don't get stuck? The stupidest things turn us into a kid. Like when I hang out with Jill, we have to be careful in that meeting and Aspen, I remember we had just gotten to be friends and it was like at school where the teacher would have said, Jill and Deborah, you move and move. You can't sit next to each other because the two of us would giggle. The right brain function or the childlike energy she's talking about, standing at the mountain, watching the sun come up. Last night I was sitting outside in the middle of winter. I'm in the dead of winter and the snow was hitting me on the head. And then we started eating the snow, which kind of tasted funny. And the next thing you knew, our heads had little wigs on that looked like little white snowballs. And that kind of joy-like idiot kind of kid-like energy, that's what activates grown-ups to go back to the fun factor. So if anyone's listening to this, I'm always puzzled when people say to me, Deb, you have such a good kid. I want to say, no, my right brain is fat and your right brain is not activated. So how do you activate it? You sing, you dance, you do yoga, you notice the falls of the sun going up, going down, you smell the water, you taste the salt, you come back into the direct experience, which is what happens when you're around Jill Bolte Taylor, and you go, this is so much fun. But if you're a flatliner and you're listening to a radio show and you're watching the internet and you're sitting in your bed and you're not moving, you're wiggling, you are definitely left brain is falling into a state of repetition that is old school.
Yeah.
Isn't that boring? Poor
can you
Jill
hear me better?
Yeah, I can hear you better. Much okay. better. So, but isn't that so true that left brain stick in the mud, don't do activations, don't be giggling, don't be laughing? It sounds so sad to me.
You know, you can always tell by how somebody dances, whether they're more in their right brain or whether they're in their left brain, because right brain people dance with their entire body and left brain people have a tendency to have their head move, but the rest of the body is just kind of like not really going anywhere. It's very interesting. It's very interesting. Different conferences, I've just noticed this. But, you know, the key here is that exactly what you said, and so I'd like to focus on that for a second. And that is the ultimate goal is that the character in the left brain and the character in the right brain love one another. Because we all have these two characters inside of ourselves. And if our left brain is saying to the right brain, you are not worthy of my time and you are not worthy of my respect and you are not worthy of my love. So you're not worthy of coming out. then the left brain is making a negative critical judgment about half of the of who you are as a human being. And if that's the relationship, and a lot of people have that relationship between their two hemispheres, then there's total discontent in the essence of who you are as a human being, and you are going to seek other ways of getting out of your pain, because that's pain. That's denying who you are as an individual. And the ultimate goal is to identify who is the character in your right brain and what is her lovely skill set and what does she love to do and let her do. And if she loves to dance, but someone said, well, you can't dance, and so then you shut that part of yourself down, that's not fair. It's not fair to you, and you've given up on that piece of you because you bought into someone else's left brain judgment on how you dance. Well, there's no judgment in how one moves their body in order to be free. So looking and examining that relationship inside of your own head between your two hemispheres is critically important, because that is the number one most important relationship any of us has, is the relationship between the character in our right brain and the character in our left brain and how they treat one another.
So that's just, as a therapist, I want to just stop. So just ask yourselves, like, here's your, let me describe it. How I, because for me, I definitely have these two friends. They're become really good friends. My right brain's a little bit sloppy. She's really funny. She's kind of irresponsible. She's very spontaneous. She thinks everything's funny. She's kind of a little bit of a flirt, not a little bit. She's a flirt, and she falls in love all the time with colors and smells and people. And she would love to be able to interrupt people all the time if she could. She would be like about 7. If I was really being authentically my right brain, honest, I would be writing and creating and talking and playing, and I'd have partners. I would be the girl that has a little school, a little camp. I'd be at camp all the time because I'm a community girl. My left brain used to judge that, like, Deborah, grow up. You're not going to have a life. You are not going to have a life by playing with people and having friends and flirting with people and interrupting people and giggling at the wrong times. I was just in a lawyer's meeting the other day, and I felt like I had my big girl pants on, like I was in my left brain pretending to be a grown up, which I'm pretty good at doing. And I could feel my right brain wanting to say the most random things, which I didn't do. I was under control, but I knew enough to watch. That critic, that grown up, that faculty that we all have will subdue and push down your life force.
That's right.
And so it's so inhibiting. And when you meet, like when Jill and I met, or when you find people, you can tell immediately, like you go, oh, she's alive.
Yeah, exactly.
Like they tickle you. So exactly. I'm going to ask you, listening in the audience, those of you that are passive, where you've let your left brain get some directive, whether it was through your parenting or it was through school or it's through appropriate or somebody, that's why I always mystified me, like church or government or somebody telling us to sit down. It usually feels very male, like you're supposed to be good. That
but
quality of energy.
But that's the character. I mean, as you would describe that as the masculine characters, it's just characteristic. And it is that in that authoritative judgment.
Yeah, it's an authority. So if we can become, this is my work, the book that's coming out. It's just my new book is finally coming out, and it's called The Missing Element, which is compassion for the human condition. And how do you get there? You turn the observer on, and you go, look at me. I look like I'm a stick in the mud, or gee, I look like I'm really not having fun, or I'm not laughing. As soon as your observer's on and you're not judging, that's the distinction. It's not right. The left brain critic. It's simply the honest, innocent observer looking over you going, gee, you don't look like you're having fun. And once that observer's activated and it makes you laugh, the way you know the observer's on is it makes you laugh, because you're like, God, I do look so straight and normal.
Yeah.
It's a little interrupting. Like when I'm in the lawyer's meeting, I'm trying to be a grown up. My observer's on going, Deb, you're not doing really well. I'm like, no, don't talk right now. So there's a heightened state. There he is, our favorite observer. That's okay. It's a right brain dog. What do you think dogs do? They tickle us. Is your dog trying to tell us something?
Do what?
Is your dog trying to talk to us?
Well, I don't know what's going on.
I love
something
that.
Happened and the dogs went, you know, they're in their right brain. That's the thing. They don't know right and wrong. They don't know that they're not supposed to do this because mom is busy on the radio. You know, all they know is right here, right now, there is something outside that is more interesting that deserves to be warned.
Exactly. Important. And that's good, because there's a commercial break coming here in just a minute. So what's your dog's name?
Oh, I got 3 of them going right now. So let's not even go there. I know I
got
to pack.
The point of the story is this is the spontaneity of a moment where we don't let ourselves feel critical.
Exactly.
And we don't, And we don't feel self-conscious, and we include the dog barking, we include the baby crying. I love when things go wrong. That's my right brain going, woohoo, now spontaneity happens. We're out of now the control living. Factor. God,
right.
Without spontaneity, I just want to go home. So the good news is when you put Jill and I together, we start giggling for no apparent reason. See what happens. And the next thing you know, I will tell you when we get back how Jill and I met and how we became friends. But I want you all to stop during this commercial break and pay attention to how much you let your right brain giggle and put your observer on during the break.
Yeah.
And just notice as you're listening to us, what stood out in this conversation and how do you apply it to yourself? Because I don't want this to be theory. I want you to realize that your right brain is starving for permission to be goofy and childlike and to activate your chakras and activate your energy force fields, because otherwise you're going to be bored and miserable.
Well, okay. More important, equally as important, it's the energy. I mean, it's the
energy.
Adventure.
Okay. I love that. Energy and adventure. We're taking a break. This is Deborah Silverman. We're on Empower Radio. It's Tell Me a Story. It's Jill Bolte Taylor, who has such a juicy story, and Deborah Silverman, who loves to listen. That's why it's called Tell Me a Story. We'll be right back after this break. Don't go away.
Come to the forest. It's a place not so far away. A place where you don't have to mow the lawn or babysit.
I saw lizards and squirrels and bugs.
Ladybugs, caterpillars. It's really cool, actually.
A place where you don't have to make time for free time.
Lots and lots of kinds of species here.
Out here, you may even meet the mysterious creature known as the other you. The enchanted you.
It's magic what flowers do.
The adventurous you.
My favorite tree. Yes. That one.
The free to be me you. Ask your parents to take you to this not so far away place. Come to the forest, where the other you lives. But first, stop by discovertheforest.org. A public service announcement brought to you by the U.S. Forest Service and the Ad Council.
Do you get tired of styling your hair every day? And do you want a good hairstyle every day? Hi, I'm Sarah Schuster. I went on a website called InventNow.org, and after that, I decided to invent something too. Something called the InstaDo. Just imagine, you just put it over your head like a helmet does, and you pick your hairstyle with the buttons on the side. Then you can have instant hairstyle in seconds. People like it. People like Jeff Bart.
I like it.
And people like Kenneth.
It's this helmet thing, and it fits over your head, and it's great.
Thank you, Kenneth. You should go to inventnow.org, and it could help you come up with your own invention. After all, look at me on the radio now.
Anything's possible. Keep thinking. Get started on your own inventions, or just play some games at inventnow.org. Brought to you by the U.S. Patent and Trademark Office, the National Inventors Hall of Fame Foundation, and the Ad Council.
Hey, Larry, mind if I sit down?
Nope.
Oh, this coffee tastes like coffee. So what's going on?
Not much.
What's new?
Not much.
Okay, but can you please put the newspaper down while you say not much?
What newspaper?
This newspaper. Oh, dude, what happened to your face? I see one, two,
ow,
three, four, five, six.
Ow.
Dude, what is
ow
this? 11 pieces of toilet paper stuck to your face?
I'm shaving in the dark to save energy. I'm helping the environment.
Well, that's a dangerous way to help the environment.
Well, sometimes you have to sacrifice yourself for the greater good.
Dude, there's an easier and safer way to help the environment without sacrificing yourself. Go green, go public. Take public transportation. It's good for the environment and you won't have to live behind a newspaper.
Wow.
But for now, put the newspaper back up.
A message from the public transportation systems across the country. To learn more, visit publictransportation.org.
And now back to Tell Me a Story with Deborah Silverman on Empower Radio.
Tell me a story. Just leave the music on. We just want to dance, Jill and I. We just want to dance. We just want to be having a party. We don't want to be listening to ourselves talk. Jill, tell them.
Hey, did you hear that commercial about come to the forest where the other you lives? Did you hear that? It was perfect. Yeah. It's exactly what we're talking about. They were saying, come to the forest and get out of your left brain and come be the big, expansive, open, loving, compassionate you, right brain.
Come be the
other you. I thought it was brilliant.
What happens when you bump into a left brain scientist who tells you you're full of it?
I don't get a lot of that.
They don't tell you you're full of it because you've got such a small energy. They don't even want to bump into you.
Well, I've had very little real confrontation because I'm not just a right brain. I'm a left brain. I'm a whole brain. And the ultimate goal of being human, one would think, is to be whole brain, to be able to do both. And any scientist worth their clout as a scientist should be curious, not judgmental. Curious.
Really? And you find those people? I'm so happy to hear that.
Oh, I find them everywhere. Oh, I have not had a problem at all.
This really is such a great story. So
think about it. I travel as a keynoter, and who are my clients? I go to medical schools. I go to rehabilitation facilities. I go to PT, OT, speech and hearing people. I go everywhere. So,
And what's your message? And what do you say? What's your keynote? What's like, if you could change the planet and you were the president? Wouldn't that be fun, Jill Bolte for president? What would be your campaign? What would be your message you'd say to everybody?
The ultimate goal of who we are as humanity is to become whole-brained. And I think that the biggest problem in our politics right now is that that we're focusing on that tiny little mean personality in the left brain. And you can't have a leader be that tiny little mean voice. That's just a tiny piece of the cortex. You have to have a whole brain thinker. And I think that that's why some of the greatest presidents are people who have been left-handed, because many left-handed people, in order to get information into the left hand, it has to go through the right brain. But language is still in the left brain, so they end up ultimately having a whole brain.
I love that story.
Yeah.
And what do you think about Bernie?
What do I think about Bernie? I think Bernie's an academic. And I love academics, but I see him more as an academic. I love the way he speaks. He speaks like an academic. He doesn't sound like a politician. He sounds like somebody who thinks and has a lot of theory.
That makes me so happy. Just listening to his theory. I don't care if he wins or not. The idea that we would actually take care of people. This is me and my sweetheart. Yeah. It makes me so, oh my God, he makes me want to smile. It's like Grandpa's here.
I know.
You never know. You never know what's going to happen next. So the point of the story is your message is whole brain people. We have to activate our right brain. Is there a story in your career, like when you were healed? I love the story in your book about how your mom got in your bed. This is one of my favorite parts about Gigi and your relationship. And I know she just passed recently, but that you had this unbelievable connection with this being, which I think really says so much about you, that she was devoted to your well-being as you were to hers at the end days.
Yeah, my mother was a superb mother. She was a superb human being, but she was an excellent mother. I got very lucky.
And she loved you.
She just loved me. Yeah, we had a beautiful relationship. I was fortunate to have her for 56 years. Yeah.
And then when it came time for you to be sick, she just took all over your healing process. Like she jumped in full on. Can you tell us that story? Like how she got in bed with you and you had just gotten your...
Yeah, so I had had the stroke, and I was very ill. I could not walk, talk, read, write, couldn't recall any of my life. I was an infant in a woman's body. My boss calls my mother and says, Jill has had a stroke, but she's stabilized. And so she's going to need long-term care. So, do what you need to do in order to be able to come to Boston. She was in Indiana for, an extended period of time. And so she arrives on the morning of the third day. And all I know is Gigi's coming. Everybody says Gigi's coming. And everybody's excited that Gigi's coming. Well, I don't even know what a Gigi is. All I know is everybody's excited. So I'm in my right brain getting excited because everybody's excited that Gigi's coming. And so Gigi comes into the room and she looks at me and our eyes just lock on one another. And she looks at me and then she walks around the bed and she greets my physicians appropriately. And then she comes around, she lifts up the sheet, she crawls in bed with me, she wraps her arms around me and she starts rocking me like I'm her baby. And in those moments, she said, I did what the only thing that I could do. When I was told that you were stable, I thought that it meant you would be sitting up, you would be okay, you know, you would be present. And as soon as I saw you, you were a breathing body in the bed. That's all you were, a breathing body in the bed. And what does a mother do with an infant? They rock them. And so I just crawled in bed and I rocked you like any mother would do.
Do you remember that?
I remember it. I remember her coming around and crawling in bed with me and racking me up and rocking me. And I thought, ooh, this is what a Gigi is. This is nice. You know, and she reclaimed me as her child. And that was the beginning of our relationship, because I didn't know what a mother was, much less who my mother was. I had no information in my left brain. And so we had to rebuild a relationship from scratch.
And could you feel your left brain coming back online?
Not eventually. Oh, yeah, yeah. Oh, yeah. My left brain was circuitry. And so there was a circuit for language. And eventually I would be able to speak language, speak words, and understand when other words were spoken. That's a different circuit. My ability to calculate numbers, that's a different circuit. My ability to define the boundaries of where I begin and end, that's a different circuit.
So you stayed in this hospital. So you're in the hospital and your mom's rocking you. And how long do you stay in that state of, how long did the healing take before you could speak?
Oh, it was months. It was months before I had fluent language. I mean,
would you speak?
It took 8 years. I mumbled. And I didn't understand. I mean, first of all, you can rah, 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 rah at me all you want. And I'm not going to respond because you just said rah, 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 and it had no meaning. So we're not
communicating. This is a crazy story I'm going to tell you, Jill. My father had herpes on the brain. And it was a moment in time where they called me. I was living in London. They called me into the hospital room. And he literally, like you, but we didn't know this, what the time left and right brain, he couldn't activate any left brain function. He could talk, but if you said to him 2 + 2, he'd say 6. If you said what year it is, he'd say 1932. He had no cognizant ability. And so I got to be with him over the next 3 weeks in this hospital room where I watched his left, like the swelling went down. He was in physical therapy. I was with him every single day. Everyone left his side. And I just, because he was a genius in real life, he had this incredible capacity with numbers. And I watched him come back to all of a sudden in this room during the physical therapy, occupational therapy session, he suddenly realized there was a moment where something came online and he started crying his eyes out, holding my hand. I love you. I love you. Like I could feel this moment where, and I said, Dad, you're coming back. And then when I asked him after, did he remember? He couldn't remember what had happened. So I'm surprised to hear your function of being present enough to track that right brain when it was done, when it was active and the left brain was gone. Who had the memory?
You know, my recovery, I documented for 8 years, and it was
a true scientist.
Know, yeah. The advantage, true scientist. I had a big old list on my big old sheet of paper, newspaper, that roll that was unused. And I would date things and say, for the first time I understood what a one was. Today, I understand what a one is. Okay. Prior to that, for 4 years, you could say, Jill, what's 1 + 1? And I would look around inside my brain for a one and ask, what's a one? And then you'd say, you know, a one is everything. And then I would say to you, well, if a one is everything, how can there be another one? I mean, it made no sense. And then one day it made sense. And from that day on, I could then learn mathematics. But it was 4 years before I even understood what a one was.
But you were you're able to track, or you were tracking what you. So it's such an interesting dynamic, because while the function of language wasn't present, your observer was.
Yes. Oh, yeah. No, I was totally conscious. Go back to the adventure of being dropped into China. Your observer, you're still aware of a lot of things. You just don't have a lot of skill set going on that is in your left brain. I mean, you have to move into the big, expansive, open experience of the present moment, because everything is foreign. You're not organizing and categorizing. And you may be some, you know, first of all, do I need to be afraid? Are these friends? Are they foe?
Were you emotional? Was it sad for you during those years? Like, were you emotionally tracking?
I was always emotional, but it was not a negative emotion. It was a awe of being alive. I was so in awe that my soul ached with thrill.
Like a little kid.
Just like a little kid. You know, there was just this, oh my God, I'm alive. I did not die that day. I'm alive. And I mean, people say, what was it? What was the impetus that gave you the courage to recover? And it was like, I never felt pity for myself. I was alive. I did not die that day. I am not a stroke victim. I'm a stroke survivor. And then I became a stroke triumphant because I got it back.
And can everybody get it back? Is the faculty available, or does it take some kind of a special circuitry that allows that to occur?
We understand that we experience neuroplasticity now. And because of that, you know, if you look at even 15 years ago, we taught people two things. One, the brain cells you're born with are the only cells you're only going to get. They're only going to die. Well, we know that there is some neurogenesis, especially in the case of trauma. So if you are an alcoholic and you drink...
What's neurogenesis mean?
New neurons can grow. Okay, new neurons can grow. So I was taught in medical school when I was back getting my PhD, the brain cells you're born with are the brain cells you're going to die with. You're never going to get any more. But we know that's not true. There is some neurogenesis. We can grow some new neurons in strategically positioned places, and especially in relation to trauma. We also know that the brain cells that you have are constantly rearranging which other neurons they're communicating with, neuroplasticity, which means that I might be able to retrain my brain to regain an ability that I have lost. Well, if we don't think there's any neurogenesis and no neuroplasticity and you've got a trauma, then we tell you there's no neurogenesis and no neuroplasticity, and you're just going to be damaged now. And I can guarantee you that if you treat someone as though they will recover more than if you treat them as though they will not recover.
So we're back to the innocence of the right brain, who doesn't limit itself to what people tell it. Like, exactly. This is where this is miracles. This is magic. This is believing.
And it's not miracle. And it's not magic. It's neuroplasticity. But we haven't had language for it. And so it's viewed as woo-woo.
I think what miracles and magic and woo, all it is a limitless thought process. Like, it isn't That's right. really a miracle. It really isn't magic. It's those of us that say, are you kidding me? It's so interesting how different people let their mind, those culprits, those guys, those characters, you say, how people give the authority
That's
to
right.
a character in your brain who's so limited. He's grumpy and he's
That's
miserable
right.
and he looks ugly and he doesn't know how to have fun. And why are we inviting him in anyway? So if people could consider right now that you have a part of your brain or part of your thought process, it's a choice. I want to talk about choice because you brought that up. And there are certain people, I wonder about this, like, did they give me an extra dose of serotonin? Because I find the stupidest things funny. Like, it doesn't take much to tickle me and you. And why is it that with the serotonin, even when I'm depressed, and I can be prone to like deep emotional states, but all you got to do is tickle me or say the weirdest thing and I'm like, are you kidding me? And the next thing you know, my right brain goes, I love when that happens. But is that a function of, you know, I've always wondered this. Is it serotonin? Is it that I have a strong right brain? Is it that my soul knows everything's a joke? Don't worry about a thing. Or is it just the temperament of my brain circuitry? Because my dad had a wicked sense of humor. Like, how does that work?
You know, we are nature and nurture. So you've described your father as a genius, as an extremely curious and intelligent and, you know, a special kind of mind. And so we already know you got that gene pool. And, you know, ever since I've known you, we've just been cracking up. So you are one of the easiest laughs I've ever known, which is why we're good friends with one another. And, you know, that's why it works.
Chemistry is that, like, I would love to have a drop, like a homeopathy drop that I could sneak into people's house and put it in their coffee or in their water or in their, I don't care where, and start to remind them that, are you kidding me? You're a joke.
Okay. Well, think about it. Lithium is pretty good for that, for a lot of people. Think about Niagara Falls. Okay. Niagara Falls, the romance capital of the planet. Why is it the romance capital of the planet? This is why. All the pollutants in the air are positively charged particles. They're pollutants. And white water is negative ionic activity. So here you have Niagara Falls generating volumes of negative ions, which are going up into the air and pulling all the pollutants out of the air. And as a result, we're all in love.
It's so true. It's so true. That's why I go to Kauai. I got to confess. It
exactly.
is so, like last night, sitting in the hot tub with those snowflakes falling on my head and just really being captivated by the hot and the cold. That is the kid. That's the right brain function. So I'm going to ask any of you listening, what can you do today? Like, is it having dinner tonight or is it having breakfast tomorrow where you go, oh, this avocado is so green? Or, oh my God, look at this plate of food that the king would be dying to eat, but we're... Like, where is that innocent, fresh attitude?
Right.
And that's what, so that now it's just a funny story.
Where's the fun? Where's the
My
joy?
Favorite memory is I'm doing the first reading. I was given to Jill for a gift. You'll remember this, Jill. And we're doing a Skype session. I do readings every day for hundreds of years. And I don't really know who Jill, at the time, I didn't really quite catch up with. It was Jill Bolte Taylor. I'm just giving her a reading. And then in the middle of the session, she was like, I love what you did. She stopped and she was like, are you ever friends with your clients? And I was like, what? And she was like, you're fun. Now that is a right, like who interrupts somebody in the middle?
I like and, you. Can we
and
be
that, And that's how we became friends. And that was an immediate chemical reaction to, oh my God, we're both having that tickle. And so that's the generous right brain that says you can interrupt. You're allowed to interrupt.
Exactly.
You're allowed to say the off the wall comment. And when you interrupt and you present with your child and you respond to the fun factor, you're going to find other people who are doing it. And then we love each other. Like, oh my God, someone else is not a full on grown up. Because what this planet is just too serious.
Well, you know, the left brain is. And right now in our politics, it's not just serious, it's mean. And we are rewarding the bully part of our brain. And it disturbs me because it's a very small portion of our left brain. And to think that we are seriously considering this as leadership for the planet is, oh boy, I think we really need to wake up and think about what's going on inside the human brain.
But I think that's one of the great things about the bully energy there, because that gives us permission to say no. Like, we are a planet of 12 different suns. Or 31 flavors, or call it what you will. And everyone, I get fascinated. I love, this is so weird, but this is my psychologist in me. I love watching the bully. I want to sneak into their head and go, can you tell me what it, I'm just so curious. What does it feel like to be mean?
Right.
Not that I'd stay there very long, but there's a compassionate interest on my part from a right brain function to be absolutely curious of what keeps somebody locked down at that left brain function of bully. And how do we make it okay for them to save face and say, you know, it's okay to say I was just kidding. I don't know why I was mean. Like if all of us could say, I'm sorry.
Right.
I don't know why I just did that.
Right.
Wouldn't that be amazing? And I future pace a lot as an astrologer. I go into the future and I imagine this planet where people are actually whole brained people. I can see it.
That's right.
And we're evolving. Like I was just writing today, who would have ever thought marijuana would be legal? Who would have ever thought we'd have a black president? Who would have ever thought that a woman, like this is so radical. And we tend to focus on the bullies and the mean people and the limits. But what about the expansion that's going on as we, like Jill Bolte Taylor gets to travel around the world and tell us, don't be limited by a stroke.
Yeah.
Nothing needs to limit us.
Yeah. And pay attention to who's who inside of your head and what's going on in there. And if you like it, great, do more of it. And if it's not what you're after, pay attention and grow the other parts. They're just sprouts. Neurons are sprouts. Just grow them.
It's like the amygdala. They talk about that, right? That there's a pattern of a thought process that gets repetitive and it goes on and on until you introduce a new thought.
Yep.
So if you're listening to Empower Radio, some part of you has an appetite to want to introduce some new thought. Now, this is what I started with the show about. There's a difference between reading spiritual books, listening to radio shows, and actually getting off the computer and going outside to notice the mountain. And to be able to go for a walk and give yourself permission to come out of the goal-oriented self or the negative voices that say, I don't want to go for a walk. I don't want, like, really? You're going to let that guy run your ship?
Right.
Beep, 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 beep.
Yeah. And that's important because we all have those characters. And it is the matter of who's in charge.
And the fascinating thing for me is, this is where I really get fascinated, that this lifetime, you were given first the skill set as a scientist to be trained. And then the stroke to be altered, and then the long ride back that you kept track of the story, and then you became the storyteller. And what's next for Jill Bolte Taylor? Are they going to tell us a movie? Are they going to tell us about you?
Well, we're working on that. We'll see how it goes.
Because the message, even if it doesn't happen, the message is Jill's evolving, you're evolving. Yeah. And there is this thing called fate. And fate has an intention to use challenge. This is what's, I don't know why they do this. But the bigger the spirit, the bigger the story.
So, is that why I had a big one?
Yes. That's why you had a big one, honey. I meet somebody with a big story, they're like, you won't believe what happened to my child. And I'm like, beep, 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 beep. The bigger the story, the bigger the student. And no one takes on more than they can handle if they use that choice button. Yeah. That's what we're introducing you to today. You've got a choice to actually take your stupid, I call them stupid stories. Take your stupid story and lift it into wisdom.
What makes
someone able to do that and someone else not able to do it? I don't know, but every one of you has some momentum, or you wouldn't be on this radio. You wouldn't be listening. Every one of you out there that's listening to a show like this that wants empowerment is closer to that choice button. It's like a button.
Okay, but let's say, okay, but here I am, and I'm hearing it, and I'm learning it, and I'm hearing it, and I hear the same thing, and a lot of people are saying the same thing, and it's all about choice, choice, choice. But what does that mean? How do I do it? How do you do it? I know how I do it. So one of the things I do is I use vibration. I'm huge on vibration. I think vibration is everything. And if I'm in a bummer of a space, I'm in a low vibration. If I'm in a high space, I'm in a high vibration. If I'm in a low space and I don't want to be there, then I will consciously say something like da 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 da. I will da 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 da. I will use my own voice to create a vibe that is high, and all of a sudden my little happy spirit goes da 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 da, and then I'm doing my little happy dance. You know, so I know my happy song, I know my happy dance, and then once I get there, then I get my butt up and I let that ingrain in my whole body and I go and I do something.
See what I said?
I consciously choose. I think we all have tools. And I think that a great process of exploration for any human being is to figure out what is your tool that you can use in order to consciously shift yourself out of one circuit into another. How do you get there?
And as an astrologer, what I get to tell people is everyone has a unique set of tools and a unique set of interest. And you've got to follow your instinctual nature. For some people, it's meditation, being quiet, putting on music, and really taking time out to recalibrate. For some people like me and you, I love to hear the sound of my voice. And suddenly that little tune you just sang tickles me. And that's error. We need interesting and content to tickle our brains. For some people, it's going out and making something or cleaning something or working in your stained glass or putting your hands on the dirt. That really changes their energy. And for some people, it's going out and exercising, and it's getting on really loud and playful and being able to be physical. So you have to know your doorway. But honestly, the biggest issue on this planet is gravity. And the common unconscious, so unfortunate, the collective unconscious is drawn to gravity, and they get down into depression, into lethargy, into heaviness, and they don't know how to step up. So there is an act of discipline. I like to think of it as discipleship. Like this lifetime, I have come down in no uncertain terms to tickle people. It works.
Okay, wait. I have to tell a little private story between you and me now. Okay, because this is going to take me back to Niagara Falls. Okay, gravity, it pulls you down. It's in the pollutants. We are so polluted. Our brains are so polluted. So we're out on a bike ride and it's like, let's go to an oxygen bar.
Who ever heard of an oxygen bar?
Where you live.
It was the funniest thing. They give you oxygen. It's so funny. And it made us high. It's like the straightest, best way to get high.
I was totally stoned.
I know. What was in the water? We don't know. They make these funny drinks. So there's an entertainment tool. It's a healthy version. I don't care what you do to get high, as long as it's healthy and addiction's not involved. Because that's gravity again. When you get caught in repetitious behavior. We had an adventure that day. We're on electric bikes. We go and what was that? To the oxygen bar, for God's sake. I remember that now. You were so funny. She got so high. We weren't even, honest to God, we were in Colorado where you can get the funny stuff. But no, we were just breathing funny drinks. It tickles her. So it's the tickling energy. It's the community. It's the friendship. Find out who in your world tickles you. We only have 3 minutes left. Here's the bottom line. Jill Bolte Taylor went through a trauma. Her brain checked out. She then went on a journey with the assistance of true love, better known as her mother. And she found her way back and became a messenger for us to say, you guys, there's only one way. It's called whole brain. She got it. Now, you have a journey. Every one of you you're listening to this. You've got some stupid story that's compelling, and maybe your mom's not there cuddling you, but you've got some counsel, whether it's Deborah Silverman, there's a million people out there. Oprah's a great friend of ours. She will give you instructions of how to stay positive. And then your job is to remember that your function is to remember you're just in a movie.
Yeah, the movie of your life. You're starring it. Write your script.
And remember, the stars are in your favor. If you want to study the stars, that's one of my favorite things. The stars are in your favor. They're waiting for us. I don't know. Why is everybody getting so caught in negativity? Beep, 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 beep. I think we just changed it, Jill.
Pollution, positive ions.
And my favorite memory of our whole talk today, which really touched me and went to my right brain, was your mom walking around the bed, getting into the bed, and all you knew was, oh, Gigi, this feels so good. See, it all comes down to who will I cuddle with? Yeah. And who loves me? And who will I laugh with? And when your mom passed away, yeah. It was so unbelievable, Jill, when you called me and we get to call in Gigi, your mom, or my dad, who's on the other side. And we go, my dad didn't believe either. Doesn't matter if you believe, we are all being loved, whether we remember their names or not. You've got a whole bunch of allies, all of you, who are wanting nothing more than to help you raise the vibration, because this planet needs us. Yeah. And that's why I'm so happy, Jill, you're here. You made me so happy today.
Thank you, dear.
I love you, Jill.
I love you, too.
It's a love fest.
Big love to everybody listening. You know,
yeah.
Just remember that big love is your love. Let it be your love for yourself and let your right brain, you know, let it go unfettered just for a moment.
Yeah, let's all make a funny noise. That's the right brain function. Okay. You're listening to Deborah Silverman. We're on Empower Radio. Tell me a story. And I have a website where you can come listen to me. You can go to TED Talk and listen to Jill. That TED Talk, Jill, totally changed me.
It changed Ted, too.
Bye-bye, Ted. That's so funny.
Love you, honey.
Everybody got changed. I love you all. Remember to come back next week. Bye-bye now.
Bye-bye.